I guess it's too young, Carol is too young to talk to you about chores, responsibility,
Well,
all that.
she
Well,
would
maybe
be
not.
too young, but I mean, you know, I sort of have my own ideas of what she's going to do when she gets older. I expect of her. I mean, actually, right now she's too young to start telling her, Carol, do this. Right now she's got a chore of her own, and that's putting her toys away, and that's about all. I expect her to put her toys away. You know, if she's going to play with them, then I get her after to put them away, and she's learning quite well. That she has to every time she's finished, you know, playing with them. Mind you, she still asks me the questions, Mommy, put my toys away? Well, she knows she has to do it.
What do you say?
I tell her, yes, you have to put your toys
Oh,
away.
she says, do I have to? She doesn't say, put them away.
Yeah, she asks me, well, she mean to say that, do I have to? She just says, Mommy, I put my toys away, you know. And, well, it's, yes, you have to put your toys away. You played with them, so you put them away. And she knows that another thing is her boots. You know, she comes into the house and kicks her boots off. She knows where to put them. And I expect her to do it too. You know, if she kicks them off in the living room, well, Kara, where do you put your boots? And she'll go and put them in a cupboard. And that's about all I expect of her right now. But mind you, as she gets older, I don't actually ask her, wouldn't be asking her to do anything that she couldn't do until she's about 8 or 9, you know. I believe then she should be able to do light chores such as dishes and maybe making her own bed. Well, mind you, now that she's starting to do her own beds, I think she can start doing it all as she gets older, you know.
Is there any reason why you expect her to do these little tasks?
Well, I figure that if everything's going to be done for her, then she'll never learn anything. You know, she may be the type who wouldn't want to go through school all through, finish her school and do something with her education or take a career. She may be the one that want to meet married young or something like that, and I don't intend to stand in her way unless it's really something that had to, you know, for me to stand up to. But I think that she should start learning as she's younger. The younger, the better, because that's how I've learned. You know, I learned when I was young, and I never had the trouble of trying to learn when I got married or anything like that. I knew how to look after babies, and it wasn't anything that would frighten me or to bring my own baby home and not, you know, nobody tell me what to do with it.
How did you get her to do these chores to begin with? Do you remember?
Well, when she was about a year and a half, we had a, like I said last summer, we had a foster children in, and I had a little boy. He was 3, and everything he played with, he used to, I don't know where he learned this, but when he came to stay with us, he was 3 then, and he used to put his things away himself. You know, if he played with a truck, then he never left it out in the yard. He'd bring it right into the house. So I didn't have to tell Carol. You know, seeing him do it, then she started, and she was about a year and a half then, and she'd, you know, anything she played with, she'd go and put it into the toy box, and she always had a toy box, so there was no excuse where she couldn't put her toys away. So ever since, as she got older, it just sort of went along, and now that if she doesn't do it, then she's told Carol, put your toys away.
That was my next question. What do you do if she doesn't want to do it?
Well, at the point she's too young, you know, to turn around and give a licking to and sort of take responsible for her things, so I usually do it for her, but I get her to help me. She's never refused me to, if she'll refuse to put them away alone sometimes, but if I start picking them up, then she comes and asks me if I need help, so
There you go.
she'd give me a hand. So at that point, then she, you know, has not said you no to me. Yet, really, she wouldn't do it alone, maybe sometimes, but with my help, she'll chip in.
How about dressing herself? Does she do any of that?
Like I said, she dresses herself, but she puts the wrong clothes on at the wrong time, you know. She'll try to dress herself, and now she, at least the last couple of weeks, I've noticed she learned her left and right. I don't know how, but we haven't taught her it. I haven't, you know, tell her this, you have your boots on the wrong side or something. I usually put it on right for her if it's wrong without telling her. But now she, maybe it's just the way it crumbles, her toes crumble up if it's wrong. She'd take it off and switch it again. And that's one thing she's known how to dress, you know. And her jackets, well, she knows she's always got her playing out for the in the yard. It's always handy, so she picks it up herself and put it on. Beside the rest of the things, then, she figured she should wear shorts that day. She'd put on shorts if they were in sight, and whatever she got a hold of, she'd put it on.
Do you have any other responsibilities that you assign which we can guess at? I picked some obvious ones, putting the toys away. Any other responsibilities that you give her?
Not at the moment. I figure she's just too young, and it's with the, you know, right now I figure she's more learning, and it's no use me pushing her to do more than she's picking up herself. I mean, she's doing a job of her own by just learning what's this and what's that. So I don't have plans of, you know, pushing her head any faster than she can go.
I think you spoke to us about feeding herself.
Yes.
She does. She did for quite a while feeding herself. Mind you, she'd make a nice sloppy mess of the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, she's learned sort of to feed herself. And for the couple of days now, I've noticed that she don't mix her tea and her soup and her milk and her soup and her dessert all together. She'd have one after the other. She, mind you, if I gave her the dessert and then the soup at the same time, she'd start on the dessert first, and she felt like it with the soup, then she'd go ahead. But she feeds herself now, and for the last couple of days, I've noticed her, you know, taking things one at a time, not everything at one time.
Maybe you've already answered this question enough in what you've said. As far as having her obey you, do you expect her to obey you immediately, or do you give her considerable leeway?
Well, I always go by first chance and sort of thing. I mean, if I told her to do something and she didn't do it, then I'd forget about it for a while and mention it again. Then if she didn't do it, she'd get her share of punishment or spanking, whatever she was coming to her. But I don't, you know, want her to do everything at one time. I mean, I don't suggest that she should do it at once. Cause,
do you read that way, too?
I think we were a lot easier. Mom and Dad, you know, were more easier on us than I am on her. I mean, my dad, well, on his side, he'd spank us if we needed, but I think that would be once in a blue moon we'd get a spanking from him. Where my mom, she'd let us go quite a ways before she laid a hand on us. It was more of telling us and sort of thing. And mind you, we grew up with the idea that we had to do it if she told us, though. I wouldn't turn around and say no, Mom, because I think my dad would have been down there with a strap or something. But even my mom says that, you know, we got away with more than what Carol gets away with now.
So you see yourself as stricter?
Well, in a way I do. You know, I sometimes think that I may be too strict on her because she's such a small child right now. And James had already said that she's just beginning to learn, and it's no use rushing her in anything because she'll only be a mixed-up child later on. So I figured I am a little too strict, and I try to soften up a little bit, but I guess that's just the way I am. I sort of go right back, snap right back into what I was before.
How satisfied are you with how well she does things, the few things that she's expected to do?
Well, I'm very pleased, you know, because considering my neighbor's children, there's a lot of them that don't even. Another thing she does is she tries to keep herself very clean. She's a very clean child. And if she gets her hands dirty, she goes into the house and washes them in the bathroom and wipes them. She's got her own face cloth through the day, like, and sometimes that thing is just as black as the mud outside by the time she's finished using it in a day. But I'm very pleased with her, you know, because she, a lot of things I've seen neighbors, my neighbor's children don't do, and she does for the age of two.
Can she fetch her own water, or is this a moist cloth that you...
I usually have a basin of water, and, you know, it's clear water in a basin. After she uses it a few times, then I dump it and pour some more in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she'd make a mess cleaning herself, but she never wants to be dirty. She wouldn't have her hands and face dirty as long as she notices it. And her hair is the same thing. If she figures her hair is a mess, then she'd take the brush and try to brush it. I don't expect her to brush her hair in the morning or sort of thing, but I, you know, let her go ahead if she wants to do it. And another thing is her teeth. If she thinks of it, and or if she sees me brushing my teeth, then she'd have to brush her teeth. So I'm very pleased with her. You know, I think that as she gets older, I hope she keeps up the way she's doing now.
These things of washing herself when she sees herself dirty, combing her hair, and doing her teeth, did she pick them up spontaneously?
It may be the reason that when she was small I was so fussy, you know, I couldn't see her get dirty, and I used to change her every time she had gotten spit on her blouse or something, and or if she her hands were dirty, I'd wash it, you know, that I never had her get dirty. And it, sometimes I get sort of scared to think that maybe that she's scared of dirt or something, you know. But beside brushing her hair and doing her teeth, well, that's things that she picked up from us.
Just saw the adults doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those two, I know she had picked up from us, because I never, you know, considered brushing her teeth at that age. I mean, if by three, then I figured she can start, but two, I didn't think that she would start brushing her teeth and brushing her hair, so.
When you do household chores, does she try to do something?
Well, at times she'll try to help me, and at other times, like, I may be busy and I don't, she wants to go out or something like that, you know, something that she wants to get into and I don't want her, then I ask her, are you going to help me? And she gets a real ball out of getting into the dishpan and splashing water all over and trying to wash. And she'd do the cups, you know. They were, by the time they got out of the water, they were quite clean, so I'd consider her sort of helping. Other times, if she see me start making the beds up in the morning, then she'd run and get the broom. She knew that after all the dusting off and that, I usually swept the floor. So she'd get the broom and start on her own. I have to go over it, but mind you, I praise her, you know, for whatever she's done.
I was going to say, what are you doing when she does something
usually
or well?
I usually praise her for it, you know.
Could you give us an approximation of what you say to
her? Well, if I catch her in the morning brushing her teeth, you know, without us had done it and she had seen, I usually tell her that, you know, ask her what you're doing, and she tells me she's brushing her teeth, and I said, well, how nice, you know, let me see how nice your teeth look now. Mind you, I don't think they're done, but I still praise her, telling her they look real nice now, and if she wanted to look at them, I'd bring her to the mirror and that sort of thing. And the same with brushing her hair. If, you know, if she brushed her hair and I seen her, then I'd bring her to the mirror and show her how pretty it looked and that sort of thing, and she'd get real proud of it. And with the floor, then I'd praise her and tell her, look how nice and clean you did the floor, and maybe you want to go on ahead and do the rest, and, you know, that sort of thing. So anything she does that's sort of I don't expect out of her, well, then I praise her for it.
Would you compare her to any of her playmates or children she knows?
You mean compare her with them?
Compare what she does or doesn't do with others who do this but you don't do it, that kind of comparison.
Or who do the same as she does.
Well, actually, only one side I compare. I always...
To her face, I mean, to her.
There's, you know, like my the little girl I was talking about, Donna.
The foster child.
Mm-hmm. The things I they don't mix up so much with Carol, so it's pretty hard to compare. But then like Donna, I'm surprised she's a 6 year old just about or a 6 year old, and she doesn't, you know, she wouldn't look after her hair, she wouldn't look after her teeth, she wouldn't look after her clothes, and you know, sort of thing. If she fell in the water, then she'd stay like that all day. If her nose was running, then she'd stay like that all day if nobody got after to clean it. Same with her hands and her face. Where Carol, if she got wet or dirty, she'd come in and let me know, or you know, she'd go into the bathroom and take off her dirty clothes. And if her nose was running, she never liked her nose to be running. You know, she'd come into the house and tell me, "Mommy, my nose dirty," so I'd clean it for her. Where at that point I can, you know, compare.
But would you do it to her? Would you say you're
look
different
at,
from him?
Look
you're
at
doing
no,
that's what I
mean. No, I'd never do that. You know, I think she does herself though, because Donna would have a maybe if Donna's nose was dirty, she'd tell Donna, "Donna, nose dirty," you know. And Mommy, look at Donna, nose dirty. So
yeah.
There, I think she starts to compare a child with herself already, where if Donna's hands got dirty, then she'd take Donna and come, wash hands, you know, and she'd try to take Donna into the bathroom and get Donna's hands clean, you know. And I'd let them go. If she figured Donna was needed a cleaning, then she can go ahead and help Donna clean. So I don't compare them,
right.
You know. But I think she does in a way,
mm-hmm.
she for cleanliness in a way. I think she sort of look at that quite a bit.
Is there anything else that you have to say about when she does something carelessly or poorly? How you react? What do you do if she doesn't do something? Well, because she's young, this is sort of artificial.
Mm-hmm. Well, for things that she does sort of careless, well, I can't, you know, get after her because she's at the age where she can't do things. You can't expect her to do things right, you know, perfect or anything like that. And I'd let her go with eating, being a sloppy mess out of it, and I don't expect her to have perfect hair after she's finished combing it or perfect teeth or her hand. Mind you, she'd go into the bathroom and give herself a wash, but sometimes she'd look as if she didn't had a wash, or you know, but still I never say that wasn't a wash or something like that. She's trying her best and I expect it to get a little better as she goes along. But with things of, you know, if she came into the house and was playing roughly or she broke something, then I'd tell her, you know, "Carol, look what you did. You weren't supposed to do that, weren't you?" sort of thing. She knows that she wouldn't put a joke of it or anything like that. She'd her face would completely change if I got after her for something that she was careless about.
I think I'll tell you what I'm driving at, why we can't go any further with a 2-year-old. These questions that I'm asking you now about when she does something well or something poorly, I'm looking for whether you are concerned with her reaching out, with achieving, whether you're beginning training in achievement, in doing something well, and having standards of excellence. And it's pretty early for that.
It is, and you know, right now I don't look for that sort of thing. If she was like a 6 year old, something like that, then I'd sort of expect of her to do, you know, things better or something. But at the point where she's only 2, then I don't sort of look for achievement.
Do you have any ideas about how, when you were growing up, you or your brothers and sisters were urged to do things well? Anything, do anything well?
I think the only time we were urged to do anything well is when we were older, you know, in my 7-8s. I remember if I didn't, sometimes the way I'd go through washing those dishes, you'd think they didn't had a wash, you know, so Mom would take a look at, before we ever wiped them, she'd take a look at them, and if they weren't done, then she'd dump the dishwater and say, we'll fill that up again and start all over. So then we were expected to do something, you know, achieve in our work, and the same with looking after the younger ones. If I went through the other child's hair, combing it, and did it a real mess, then Mom would, you know, sort of, she didn't expect me to put it up or braid it or put in a ponytail, but to brush it well for her. And then she'd tell me, you know, that I was old enough and I had to start looking after her, the children with her, or myself at least. If I couldn't do it for the other ones, then I should do it for myself. So those things, there's a few things like that were easy, and she expected us to do better, and if we couldn't do it, then she'd start over, make us start over. But I think also she looked at the point of if we were doing it, you know, if we were doing the dishes and wanted to go out and play in a hurry, then obviously we'd do it any old way sort of thing. And then she'd look at it. But if we were trying to do our best and couldn't do any better, then she'd ignore it.
Yeah. Can you remember any direction to achieve things on the land, achieve setting fishnets or boys doing things on the land? Any urge, goading by your parents to be capable?
Well, the only thing I remember ever, Mom and Dad ever putting into our heads so much is look after things, and that's about all.
Goods, material?
Mm-hmm. We were pounded into our heads. Things could last long if you look after them. And Dad had given the boys, they had a 5-horse to themselves, and my dad was very particular at how they looked after it. They had their own dog team, so they had to look after their own dog team. And
at what age would this be that they had to take care of the
Well, George kicker? Was 10 when he started taking care of the kicker and a dog team. And before that, George and I had a team, like, you know, the same team of our own were given to when we were pups. And Dad didn't get too mad or didn't fuss too much if we didn't look after them that well, you know. Some nights we might leave them, like in the afternoon we'd come back from the trap line, leave the dogs in harness till about 6. And if Dad came home and seen them in harness, then he'd take them out. But as we got older, now or before that, Dad would, if those dogs were in a harness more than an hour, he'd either take off his belt and tell those boys get out there and unhook those dogs, put them on their chains, or otherwise, you know, he'd go out there and shoot them or give the boys a licking. They can't.
10, 11.
Mm-hmm. We were expected to look after them then. The same with the kicker. If you land the boat, we had to bring up the tank and bring up the host. And if it was raining, cover the kicker. And if the boat was leaking or something, you had to bail it and get it up on the shore and find out where the hole was, and so that he can patch. We didn't have to patch it ourselves. Things like that. I remember my parents really pounding into our heads. The same with the girls. We couldn't look after anything because, we didn't have anything to look after except our clothes and, you know, maybe our toothbrush and things like that, girls' stuff. And Mom said if we didn't learn to look after them now, when we had our own home, we'll never be able to look after anything.
It's again 7 or 8
mm-hmm.
that you got these instructions mm-hmm. first.
And by the time I was 9, 10, then they really got down to it, you know. If we couldn't do it, then there was no reason that we couldn't do it then for them anyway. And like the boys, if Dad said, well, you can run a kicker now, and, you know, that sort of thing, then you have no reason why you couldn't look after it too. And it's the same with the girls. We like to have nice, clean clothes on, and, you know, dress up and that sort of thing, then I don't see why you can't look after your own things.
Another thing I'm curious about, this isn't really connected with achievement, maybe it is. You've got cold temperatures up here. This is the Arctic. What kind of, I'm going away a little bit from this, what kind of instructions did you get from your parents for caring for yourself in the cold?
I really don't remember. Mind you, my mom was the only one that got after us, I think, more about, you know, the weathers. Like, I never had to sew clothes, you know, make our clothes. And I think not till I was 11, then I helped Mom in the winters. I mean, whenever I had a chance to sew them winter clothes, mucklucks and that for her. And I know she was very fussy about, you know, how we were dressed.
Yeah.
She,
what did she watch for?
She usually seen that we had warm clothing, and if our clothes was torn, that, especially in the winter, she always made sure that our shoes weren't torn, our mitts weren't torn, and our parkas weren't torn. I don't know why, but she was sort of more special about it, you know, in the winter. So, but I don't remember them, you know, really.
Maybe they never spoke to you about these things, but you learned them, I don't know how.
I guess it sort of came natural.
Were you warned about cold feet or cold fingers?
When we were smaller.
Frostbite?
When we were small, yes, when we were smaller, you know, Mom sort of, like, I remember going out to play or something, and she'd always stick her head out the door and call us, you know, are you cold? Are your hands are warm? Let me feel your hands, you know. Come in for a while and have warm up. And it's the same thing I do with Carol. If she goes out in the winter now, then about every 10 minutes I call her in and check her hands and her feet and her face for frostbites. And Mom used to do that, but she, you know, she never told us then anything about it.
You were never told that it's very dangerous? Excuse me.
Yeah. No, they never really told us anything. Maybe it's because of Mom checking so much on us that, you know, she figured nothing would be able to happen, her always being around, and she knew enough to check on us every so many minutes and check our hands and our face, so we were never told that it was dangerous or anything like that.
Might you run out without mitts? Would she watch for that?
Yes, running around without mitts and, you know, one pair. When we were going out, I know she used to check on what we had on our feet, you know.
When you went out for travel?
Any place, playing out anywhere, out in the yard or to travel. And she'd always check on our feet. Out to travel, I remember her, every time we were going to go out on a travel line with my dad or anything, she usually had an extra pair of duffels, extra pair of mitts and shoes in the bag, put in a bag for us, so we had to stop at a campfire or something, and if we happened to got our feet wet or our mitts, then we can, you know, just switch instead of having to stay in cold, wet feet all through the trip or something like that. So we always had an extra pair with us.
You've given no instructions of what you should do if accidentally you went through the ice?
No, we weren't given, but I think we all sort of, I don't remember if we were given any, you know, instructions, but I know for sure that we knew, most of us knew that if we felt the ice going under, then we'd, instead of standing there, we'd stretch out, you know, lay on the ice and never stand and go under. If you stretch out, then your weight stretched out too, and you wouldn't go under as fast, and you'd be able to get to shore or something like that. But
any other hints like that you can
remember? No, that's about the only thing I've...
Any instruction what to do if you're frostbitten? They're not right close to home?
Mom always, I don't know if this is true, but she used to tell us that if our hands or anything was frostbitten, then not to, what was it? It was something about snow, I think, either to put some snow on it or something like that. I don't know if it would, you know, do anything. But I know for one sure thing, we were never, she used to tell us, now look here, she says, if your hands happen to be frostbite, don't go right up to the campfire and, you know, heat them right over the campfire. Heat them very slow where the pain wouldn't bother, she says. You know, don't shove your hands right into the campfire or your feet, she said. Heat them slow. And I don't think she expected it to happen because we always had a, you know, she always made sure we were dry or something and things like that where she didn't have to warn us about it. And we didn't go out that much on our own until we were older. George and I would go out with the dogs maybe to, you know, about a mile away from home and or with Mom. She'd come along with us. So we practically didn't go out that far unless we were with someone.
Would you say that in the winter there was a deliberate attempt made to keep you close to the house or in the house?
At all times, we weren't allowed, you know, that far away
from
home.
Summer or winter?
Mm-hmm. I mean, and like for going out in the winter, we had to be, you know, not too far away from home where we wouldn't have to get, where she didn't expect us to get too cold. And furthermore, she never let us go if it was too cold out, you know, if there was a big storm or something like that. We weren't allowed to go. The trap line can wait another day, you know. So we just never went. And same with the summer, you know. Well, we weren't allowed anywhere, I think, in the summer except on the ground. You know, they didn't... No, we weren't allowed in the boats alone. Mind you, my brothers had a boat of our own. I mean, like they, you know, they run this 5-horse and this skiff. And the furthest my brothers and I ever went with it is to the fish nets right across the river. Instead of using Dad's outfit, we went with a, you know, but we were never out of sight from them. So, obviously, they, you know, I don't think they trusted us to go out of sight. You know, you could have tipped over. Mind you, we all learned how to swim. Dad taught us all how to swim when we were young. And so, but still, Mom said the most expert swimmers can drown.
Right outside the house, he taught you to swim?
Yeah, not right out. Well, across the river and also a little further down on a sand beach. We used to go out swimming all the time, and that's where he taught us to swim. Mom never learned how to swim in her life, but the kids all did. You know, my dad was quite a good swimmer. As a matter of fact, he used to swim across this river here.
East Branch?
Mm-hmm. Swim across it and halfway back, I think it was, or all the way back when he was younger. So, you know, we all learned how to swim, but still that didn't get us away from home that far, you know.
Okay.
They still didn't trust us, no.
Did you ask at the first meeting about learning to walk on snowshoes or drive dogs and things like that?
Well, we spoke about driving dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we mentioned snowshoes.
Did anybody teach you to walk on snowshoes?
No, we didn't learn, and there was no extra snowshoes. I mean, we did learn, but there was no extra snowshoes where we had to be taught. We could have been taught. Mind you, I guess my dad could have had made us an extra pair, but he didn't, you know, figure that it was any use. But we used to go crazy over the snowshoes. You know, if we were going out to play, we'd fight with each other to get a hold of the snowshoes. And
there was only one pair in the household?
Mm-hmm. And it was my dad's one. We were too small to use it. And Mom didn't go anywhere in the winter, you know, she just except about a mile away from the house with the kids, and that's about it, the further it should go.
And that was a good track, a good
mm-hmm.
track.
It was all just a road, you know, a good path where she didn't need snowshoes. But the we'd get a kick out of just walking, you know, it must have been just the idea of staying on top of the snow with those snowshoes, and we were... As soon as we got our coats on, we'd ask Dad, you know, which one of us could get a hold of the snowshoes first, or whoever was dressed first ran out and got a hold of them while we used them practically the whole day. And we learned that way, you know, by playing around with them. And as a matter of fact, George is a very good runner with snowshoes. As he must have started practicing when he was about 7, and he just kept it up right till he was about 12.
Did somebody encourage him to practice running his snowshoes?
No, he just kept it up, you know.
When you use the word running, do you mean snowshoeing for speed?
Mm-hmm.
Deliberately?
Yes, as he got older, I think what encouraged him was that these snowshoe races they used to have on the ice carnival, and he used to time himself and run for a kid, and that my dad's snowshoes were just about as big as this table, they were so huge, and you know, he did very good for a kid in those big snowshoes, and even in a bush where there's willows and that, he'd, you know, make a pretty good, because he didn't get stuck or anything like that. Mind you, I couldn't walk very good with them, and yet I tried, but we still sort of fought over them and that sort of thing.
Anything else about learning to live in the bush that I can't think of, that you can think of?
For one thing, I know about living in a bush is no matter where you went, you were expected to have a box of matches on you and an axe. Yes, we were told that.
And an axe.
Mm-hmm. An axe.
So if you went out on the trap line with your brother about a mile from the house, did you have to carry that too?
No, not then. But if we were going any further, and no matter. It's hard to say, because this thing, we had it's a little container, waterproof container, a plastic jar, a bottle, anything. But Dad always put into our heads that if you're packing matches, no use having matches if you're going to pack it in a box. Because if you fell in the water, or if you're walking in the deep snow, they'll get wet and they wouldn't light. Always have your matches in a container where it's sealed and it couldn't get wet. Because he said that, you know, it's no use having matches at all if they're going to get wet. Mm. And another thing is never carry a lighter.
Oh.
Because he said it's no use having a lighter if it's going to freeze or something like that, you know.
He says, it won't work in real cold weather.
It wouldn't, it may not, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said, what's the use of having something that's not going to work? And always make sure you have matches is the most safest things, with a container covering them to keep them sealed from being wet. And an axe.
What was the purpose of the axe?
Well, he said it's always best to have an axe. He didn't really give a purpose, but I figured it's most likely like if you had to sleep somewhere, you couldn't pretty well just lay your head down, you know, on a wet ground or something. You'd have to have spruce boughs or something. So if you can get a tree down, then you can chip the spruce boughs off and use the spruce boughs for your bedding. And also, you may be in a place where there it's hard to get a hold of dry wood without having to cut a tree or something like that. So you'd need an axe. But I figured that was the reason why he always said it's always sensible to have an axe, you know, little axe.
Did he teach you how to start a fire if you didn't have dried wood in the place?
Well, one thing I know for sure we knew enough to do is pack a bottle about this big with oil in it. Oh. Never gas, but oil. You know, because if you ran into a place where there was no dry wood or anything, like, you know, you couldn't get it, then you can light the oil to anything just about, and it'll burn.
Yeah.
And another thing we were taught is never just make your campfire on top of a great big snow lump or something like that. You'd have to move your scrape the snow off the ground and get your wood piled up, and then pour the oil between the wood. And when you put a match to it, then it bound to light.
Your dad taught you this.
Mm-hmm. Where if you just poured the oil on top of the snow and put the wood there, then you don't suppose it'll light, you know, as easy. You may have a difficult time, or it just may not light at all.
Do you remember being shown how to make a fire, or did you pick it up simply from watching others?
I think we picked it up mostly from my parents, you know, my dad going out in the trap line, that sort of thing with him, and then, yeah, that's where we've most likely picked it up from.
You wouldn't remember the first time you were responsible for making a
campfire
or something like that, so a stove fire?
Well, actually, we used to, and just, you know, if we went out and played in the yard, we'd go and haul a bunch of brush out of the bush and bring it down to the ice and kick the snow off the ice and make a campfire out there. So if we got cold, we'd warm up, you know. And we were always warned never to stand where the smoke is blowing, you know, never face the smoke or never stand because of sparks or...
The wind blowing at you.
Mm-hmm. You always stand on, you know, more on the other side of the fire. So we, you know, Mom sort of knew that we knew never to stand in front of the fire or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Any instruction in case you find yourself in a snowstorm and a blizzard to help protect yourself?
No, because we didn't go out that far. They never gave us any clue on what you should do, you know, because they didn't expect us to go out. Mind you, they might now give the boys some, you know, hints and that sort of thing, or otherwise they have already picked it up, but we weren't told anything because we didn't go out that far.
Or any instruction on how to find your way?
No, not that either, because like I said, we, you know, didn't get far enough to get lost or anything like that, and Dad's area, we've been in it so much and through it so much, and I think they knew enough that we would be able to follow the trail that we came on, and in the summer, well, we didn't, you know, go out that far.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could tell us of any adventure or crisis that has occurred to you in the bush, so that we could see your reaction to it. Getting lost, or I don't know what possibilities exist.
They're
facing an animal, not yet dead in the trap, or... If that's a crisis, maybe you take it for granted and there's no crisis involved.
Well, for facing an animal, I don't think we, you know,
maybe
just sort of came as a common thing. We didn't, it wasn't really. Actually, Mom said, I remember too, the first animal that I caught in a trap was a link alive in a rabbit trap, and I must have been quite small, because I didn't know it was a link. I thought it was a big dog, you know. And when I seen it, I got all excited, and I was going to go up and grab it around the neck, you know. Mommy, I caught a dog, and I just managed to get so far, and the link went down, you know, and tore all my park cover and grabbed a piece of my park cover by Mom pushing me away. I just got missed. And that's about all I remember, you know, because I was quite small, and that was about the only time. After that, I was warned about any wild animal in a trap, and, you know, not to go near them and that sort
this
of thing.
A steel trap that you would say?
Yes.
A steel trap for rabbit?
Mm-hmm. A very small one, and...
A small one?
It was just one of those little ones, I think. Ones, and it was about that big, and it had... The link was caught by its toenail.
Mm.
And it's just a miracle that it didn't break out of the trap or something like that when I was there.
Yes.
She knew how to shoot and that with a gun, so she shot it. Otherwise, I guess if I had gone alone, mind you, she never trusted us to go alone on a trap line or anywhere till we were older, about 8 or 9. Then she figured we knew better than to run up to a wild animal in a trap and try to touch it or something like that.
Todd, how old were you when this link thing happened?
About 6, because we used to have our own trap line. Another time was a marten. I don't know why I wanted to. Well, Mom said that I was such a brave child when I was, you know, younger, that nothing really scared me, and I guess that's the reason why she just went with us along, you know, because she said no matter how many times she told us I used to, well, rabbits, you can take them out of the snares if they're caught, and, you know, you can pack them home alive and that sort of thing, and they wouldn't bite you. Yes, they're so, they'll try to bite you, and if they ever get a hold of you and bite you, you know, it's pretty sore, but otherwise, they don't usually try to bite you. And what I used to just be a, you know, a type where if I seen something wild in the trap, I'd cry, you know, if Mom wanted to kill it. And I always wanted to bring home a wild animal or something like that. And it's too cute to kill, Mom, and so pitiful, you know. And let's take it out of the trap and let it loose and sort of thing, you know. And one time, a marten was in a trap, and we went, no, it wasn't a snare, caught around a waist. And we can hear it screaming, so Mom says, we've got something in the snare, better go and see what it is. You know, it sounds more like a mink or a marten. They're big, their pelt is, you know, high price. So she said, if it's going to break loose, it'll break loose and lose it. So we took the gun along and walked to the snare. And this little thing was sitting up right beside the road. And I put my hand out to it. Without Mom noticing it, I guess, or something, and she was so excited about, you know, trying to get it to shoot it, and I stuck my hand out, and mind you, I had big, thick mitts, but it grabbed, and I could just feel, you know, just the tip of its teeth. So Mom said that I was always the type who couldn't see an animal killed, you know. I think she figured that the animal would kill me before I'd kill it. I was always wanting to touch them or grab them or pack them home like that, and so,
did you never shoot an animal in the trap?
No, it just broke my heart to see my mom shoot them, and I couldn't, well, we were too young for the guns, and, you know, if we caught something alive in a trap, I wouldn't stay to see her shoot it or anything. I usually start it back home and tell her she can shoot it.
How about having your way and getting a pen?
We were, yes, they let us have our way in having a pet. We had pet rabbits a few times, and Mom always, you know, if there was a live rabbit, then what do you want me to do with it, kill it, or we'll bring it home? And if I was about the only one who was brave enough to pack it home alive, or, you know, sort of thing, and so Mom said, well, fine, if you want it, then you can have it, you know, wouldn't kill it. So we always brought, a few times we have brought home a live rabbit, and we had a pet squirrel. What happened is it got caught on its tail, and Dad said the tail froze, so what we're going to do, it probably was sitting on top of the trap, and when it sprung, it got its tail. What we're going to do is going to have to cut the tail off, he says, and we'll make a cage for it. So we brought the trap and all home and left the squirrel in the trap, and Dad made a cage right away, and you know, he clipped the tail, and the squirrel, being scared, took off for the direction where the trap, you know, where the box trap was, and got it in there, and we kept it for a while until it died itself. And the rabbits, the same thing. Either the dogs would get a hold of them, or they'd, you know, die off themselves. Mind you, there was a couple of times where I let them loose, you know, when Mom said they're going to die off themselves from being captured. They're not used to the life of being captured, so she said either we kill it or let it go. And she said after it's captured, they're not as good to eat. I mean, they're not good for eating after you capture them, being a tame rabbit. I mean, they're no good for eating, so we usually let them go or give them to the dogs if we should kill them.
Bird pets,
the only thing we had is the seagull.
Seagull?
Mm-hmm. And we didn't keep it. Its wing was broken, and I found it. It was in this fall, you know, before the birds going south, and it was storm. As a matter of fact, the ice was frozen already. And this one morning I went out, and here was a seagull sitting on my steps. So I grabbed the whole of it, and it put up a fight and pecked us, and we healed its wing and let it go, but it didn't go south, and I don't know what happened. It didn't go south because It must have froze to death because a few months later, as a matter of fact, in the spring, we found it, you know, dead under the snow. The same one, you could see where we've been fixing its wings, so it must have froze to death, being so late of the year to try to fly back south. So that's about the only time I've had a bird.
Well, how did you eventually harden up to be able to take animals? I should think being soft wouldn't do at all for travel.
I still wouldn't, you know, as a matter, even with James, if we went out, like I said, we went out trapping a few times, and he's caught in alive rats, you know, and I'd turn away if he was going to clobber it and kill it. I still don't like the idea of them killing the animals.
You mean you're one of these people who don't find rat shooting a tremendous excitement?
I do, but... yes, I do, you know, I find a great kick, but it's something different with an animal caught in a trap than shooting at an animal. Actually, I haven't shot at an animal, you know, really killed animals, but I've trapped them and usually find them dead in a trap, so it's a different thing. I didn't see them die or anything like that, where if they're alive, then... I don't know, I get all soft-hearted to them, and I just hate the idea of them, you know, being killed. I'd rather see them go free than killed, but you can't always free them because they put up a fight if you're going to touch them or anything like that, so they pretty well have to be killed.
Would your brothers or your husband tease you about that?
No, well, James does, but the boys, I think my brothers are just about if it's in a trap and alive, they... Mind you, they'd kill them, but they, you know, wouldn't mind. They'd put up a hesitation first, you know. Should I kill it? Do you think I should bring it home? It's so cute. Look how pitiful, you know. And then it'd come to the point, oh, it's suffering just as well. We kill it, you know. But they're not as bad as me. I mean, if it's suffering, I'd think then I'd, you know, get its pain away from it if I took it out of the trap and brought it home alive, sort of thing. But them, where they'd hesitate too before they kill anything.
How about your mother? Was she patient with you in this?
Yes, she was. I don't know. Maybe she. Well, animals in a trap look so cute, you know. And they all. I know marten and rabbits. When they're caught, they seem to, you know, just by looking at you, they seem to ask for pity. They'd sit there in a trap, and you just pretty well had to pity them. Even Dad, with a wolf and a wolverine, said that a lot of times he's caught wolverine and wolves, and he just felt like letting them go, because they'd sit there and look at you as if to say, please, you know, let me go, and that sort of thing. Because he said they look awful pitiful and so cute. They wouldn't fight. They usually just sit there and wait for you to make the move.
Wondering what's coming.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the reason why everybody sort of hesitates to killing an animal.
Does James have the same reaction?
I don't know. Really, I don't think so, because he said one time he had to kill a dog he loved so much. And he said that if he had to kill that dog, he'd never hesitate to kill anything else. And like we went out trapping last spring, and when I seen him, you know, when he brought this little rat out of the hole alive, he just took one look at it and gave it a kick under the jaws and knocked it over, knocked it out, you know, and he broke his neck. So he never even hesitated to it, you know, where I was saying, gee, you should have left it alive a little longer, you know, sort of thing, and gee, you're mean, and same with foxes. Last fall, he took Mary, my sister, out on a hike. No, that was the fall before last. We went out on a hike on a Sunday, and he had traps just down by the dump here. Mm-hmm. And he set a few traps. Mind you, he was working, and he said, the main idea we set it for was figuring catching a white fox, and maybe we can have, I wanted white fox trimming on Carol's Parky. So he said, well, we'll set a trap, and we may be able to you know, get a rat, a white fox. So we did, and it was so cute, you know, the way it sat there, and it just sort of, you know, kept doing that to you, and James just looked, he's sizing you up, you know, and I just about cried to see him kill it, and it didn't bother him, but Mary, you know, after we fiddled around with it for quite a while, he says, you want me to kill it, and, you know, and or should I put a snare on its mouth and we'll let it go, you know, because it was so cute.
Oh, so James was feeling sorry for it too, huh?
He might have been, or it was just the thought of what we were putting up, you know, because
yes.
Mary was saying, gee, it's cute, you know, don't kill it, James, leave it, let it go, it's too pitiful, you know, and I kept saying that too, and he says, look at its foot, it's all raw, you know, he says, but look at its foot, if I let it go, it'll die later, you know, it freeze. And, you know, in the end, he's, the first part he said, should I kill it, you know, he asked me, or should we, because he can put a snare on its mouth and tighten up the snare and let the trap loose,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, just hold a snare till he's ready, and it'll probably run away, it wouldn't attack. And he, you know, he sort of asked me, and when I looked at the foot, then I says, just as well it'd be dead, because it'll die later anyway. So, you know, then he killed it.
And she got a
mm-hmm.
fox trim on.
Now she does, and I don't regret it. I mean, mind you, I hate the thought of killing. And even my dad said, you know, one time he said that it broke his heart to kill a wolf. And a wolf is something that you know, you wouldn't give second thought to when you see one. But he said one was in a trap, and he said he petted on the head. It was so calm and gentle. He petted on a head, you know, and he said it just broke his heart to kill it. Because it just seemed to say, you know, please let me go. I'd wait for you to open the trap. I wouldn't bother, you know. But he said he couldn't take chances of opening the trap for it because it may attack him when it's not looking or something. But he said he petted and it lift his chin and he petted under the chin. And then it put his head down. But he could just see the hair raising slow, you know. And usually when the hair raises, they're going to attack. And he said he petted again and it lift his chin again. He said he would just... He, you know, it just broke his heart to put the gun, to load it and shoot it. And another time was a wolverine. He said a wolverine really knows its way, that those animals.
Smart.
Really smart. And this wolverine that he caught, apparently when he came to the trap, it threw itself back, you know, on its back, and it just sort of laughed. Got this funny noise, he said, as if they were laughing, and he said he tickled it under the arm and it rolled like a puppy playing, and it'll, you know, run around its trap as if it wasn't hurt and play with him and rub his back to dad's legs and really wanted to be petted and played with. But he said he just started to turn away no sooner and it grabbed the hold of his mitt. So he said he knew then it wasn't something to play with, so he had to shoot it. But you know, they claim animals in a trap are so, you know, they know how to play their part, too.
Yeah. That's what your father told you?
Mm-hmm. He said, well, he has always told us an animal may look very beautiful in a trap. He may look so pitiful, and he don't let it, you know, get to you, he says, because they all have a part to play. And he said, that's their part. He says, they can be so calm and gentle. You could pet them and everything. He says, I have had experience in trapping so many years. And he said, I should know by now. He said, any animal. He said, even a moose shot and wounded, if you go up to it, he'll play a part too to you. But the minute it turns your back, you turn your back, he'll attack. So obviously, we've learned that. And, you know, we never had tried to let a wild animal loose, except a rabbit.
Yeah. These attitudes that you're describing, do you think there's any, got anything to do with your father being of Cree background and your husband being of Lushu background? These differences? If there are differences.
I don't know. James has never told me anything, you know, about an animal. But Dad where my dad is a different type of person, he seemed to practically, I can say, read an animal's mind, you know. When we were small, we used to go out with him, and I remember, you know, him having animals in a trap, mink, and links and that sort of thing. And he'd go up to them and talk to them, you know. Well, what are you doing here, you know? And fine cat you are, you know. Can I take a look at your fur? And you think you're worth letting go, you know, and sort of thing. And the animal would just lay there and look at him, or otherwise it sort of played to him, you know. And Dad would get down and try to pet it, and so he had a way so good. Same with dogs. My dad's got a way with dogs where they'd fall all apart, you know, if he went and fooled around with them. And same with animals. I've never seen him, you know, go up to an animal and take a look and kill it. He'd always fool around talking to it a while and petting it. And he always petted an animal. You know, I've seen him pet animals. Well, they claim Wolverine and all that are very wicked and there are no animals to play around. But I've seen my dad, you know, pet them and play around. Mind you, he wouldn't go right up and do it right off the bat. He'd talk to it and hand it his mitts. He'd always start out with its mitts and he'd brush it with his mitts. And if it reacted to him, then he'd, you know, play around with it. And he usually wait for it to strike before he killed it. Maybe that was the reason why we were so touchy about, you know, killing animals, was Dad would do that with any animal before he killed it.
And your husband is more businesslike?
James, I think he's more business. I've, you know, never seen him give a second thought to killing something. If something was there, then he'd go right ahead and bang it, you know.
Now, we have seen children go after birds, even songbirds around here, without a second thought.
Mm-hmm.
And although it breaks my heart, I think, well, perhaps if they're going to grow up to be hunters and trappers, they can't be too soft-hearted about these animals. Do you learn to take aim at birds and try and...
No, my mom and dad was very strict to us about, you know, killing harmless things and things that are not used to us. I remember when the boys first start training with a gun, they used to do that, you know, shoot at little birds, squirrels, things they didn't need. And my dad used to take the guns away from them. You know, Dad always said, those little things has no harm to you. You should never have to use a gun. You should never use a gun unless you have to use it. If it's something you need from the land, then you use it on it. Or if an animal attacks you, then you use it. But not just for the high ball of shooting at an animal or, you know, destroying something. He said, because everything was put on earth for some reason. And well, the boys used to laugh at him and says, well, why is the, what are those little birds on earth for, you know? And he says, they're here just for beauty, and leave it like that. Don't shoot at them just because you're going to have a target practice and you haven't got anything to shoot at. Leave the birds, the squirrels, the things that you don't need alone. The same, like now the seasons are all closed and the boys would want to go out and target practice. Well, they weren't, if my dad caught them, they'd get a heck for shooting at even a rat on a river, you know, because there was no reason to shoot at it. They didn't need it. It's out of season. They couldn't do anything with it. So we were taught never to kill anything unless we needed it or it attacked us. But, and I, you know, kids down there do the same. Some kids go down there and shoot slingshots at these beautiful little birds. And I get after them, you know. You get out of my yard. Mm-hmm. You kids, you better go home, I says, and no slingshots around here, or quit shooting at those birds for nothing. Because that's how my dad taught us. We didn't just go out in the yard and shoot at anything we seen. It had to be something that we wanted to use, or we had, you know, needed it. Then we'd kill it. That's how we were taught, not to shoot at just any old thing. And Dad always said that to you. He always told us, how would you like if I took a gun and start shooting at you for practicing, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he says, you sure wouldn't like it, then don't do that to the birds.
So that, in a way, he was teaching you conservation, saving the animals instead of wasting them.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose also taking them in careful measure, not leaving some beaver, for example.
Yes, if we killed something, then... Like beaver, You can use the hide for sale or for clothes, you know, for trimmings and that. And the meat, either if it's skinny and, you know, you could see it's no good for eating, for food, then it was for dogs. And Dad didn't see why we could, if we killed a beaver, then he'd, if we came home with a hide, it wasn't good enough, you know. He usually asked us where was the meat off it. And if we said, oh, we left it out in a lake, then he says, well, don't you think it should have came along too? You know, the meat can always be of some use for something, he says. If we can't eat it, then it'll go for dogs. So we were taught never to kill anything unless it was needed. And he didn't, it wasn't as if just, you know, you kill rats and bring home the hide. Well, we were told if we can possibly bring home the meat, then we bring it home. You know, it was for use for the dogs or for food. We weren't allowed to play with things like that. Dad always said that, you know, there may be thousands of rats in the world, I mean in the Delta, but they were of use for something, both the meat and the hide, so we used the both things, and we never learned to play with anything. The same with fish, if we caught, you know, white fish and then we didn't need it, or we had the net set for nothing or something like that, or a jackfish, still Dad would say,